Hey, Rob, how are you?
Good, how are you?
We're doing well, sir. I got you here with Sean.
Hey, Rob.
Hey, Sean, how are you?
I'm doing just fine, thanks. Good weekend?
Good. Great. Thank you.
You know, I don't know how I've never noticed this before, but I just noticed that the first four digits of your dialing code are 1929.
Oh, that's funny.
That's a good idea for your business?
I didn't think about that.
1929-65.
Well, you're the only one that's ever noticed it, so I guess I'm okay.
Good.
So well, what's on your mind this wonderful August day?
Mr. Knapp, we are coming through this period having, I believe, repositioned the practice so much better. You said to me at one point when everybody had left about a year ago, almost today, someday you'll look back on this and say it's been the best thing that ever happened to you. And I have far too much respect for you and think of you too much of a friend to have said you what I was really thinking when those words left your mouth. But they were not, oh, I agree 100%. But you were correct. Sean, you know what? I will say I did a lot of work on this, a lot more than I would normally do. We have oriented ourselves and reminded ourselves that we're not hedge fund managers, that our great gift is relationships and being the guy that can look at a lot of divergent facts and circumstances and create great outcomes for clients. And we've gone back to work on that as our primary mission. And in order to do that, we had to outsource the investment management process. So I would tell you that a year ago today when Claudia was still sitting in her desk and Michael was, that probably 60 hours a week, 40 hours a week were spent on portfolio management. And we were probably personally or directly managing, and when I say directly managing, I mean picking individual securities and ETFs. 50%+ of the assets on the book, Sean.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, if you wanted a growth stock, we knew what we were doing. You wanted a preferred, we got you covered. I mean, whatever you wanted, we had no doubts about our expertise in that area. And since that time, we have really gone to school and found some of the best managers on the face of the earth, guys that are, frankly, much smarter than we'll ever dream of being. In that particular niche, and I've done a great job of that. John, how much of our assets would you say we're down to managing now?
I mean, it's probably 70%.
Down 70% from where it was?
It's 90
to
95.
So,
with ways to get that to 50 by the end of the year.
Okay, so I'm getting confused. What were those numbers?
So we were managing about 90 to 95% of every asset that was on the books. Through sub-advisors, gone to about 70, and our plan is by the end of the year to have that at close to 50.
Okay.
And, Rob, I would say to you that some big percentage, and I'll let Sean identify this because he knows this number better than I do, of the remaining 50, you may say, well, why the heck are you guys going to hang on to that 50? And I think the answer to that is because it's the fangs and we're in at like 12 cents a share.
Because
I understand.
Yeah.
Those are 35% of the assets.
So your performance has been good.
We got off the phone this morning with our first call at 9 a.m. to let a guy know with $45 million in he and his wife's portfolio, but he's up 16.5% or $6.5 million this year. He said, okay, got to go. Thanks for the call.
We talked to him a bit, Rob. This was a really great conversation. We talked to him a bit about reducing Apple, Amazon, mm-hmm. some of these others just because they're so huge. And he said, yeah, you know, I just hate to do it because this, that, and the other thing, and so on and so forth. I said, I understand. I said, you know, whenever I go back and I reread Ben Graham, who I always think it's important to remind everybody, taught Warren Buffett everything he knows. And Warren is a great, better wordsmith than Graham was. But when he talks about the fact that you want to buy when others are fearful and sell when others are greedy, and you say, well, of course, that makes perfect sense. Why wouldn't everybody do that? The conversation we're having right this moment underscores why nobody does that. It's really hard to do.
Right. No, it's true.
Here's an interesting little statistic for you. I thought, Rob, it was for us and the client. It took Apple 40 years to become a trillion-dollar company.
42.
42 years to become a trillion-dollar company.
24 months.
It took them 4 to 5 months to add the next trillion.
It's unbelievable.
It's crazy. I would say it's two things. It's unbelievable, and it's short-term unsustainable, I think.
Well, so here's the thing. Here's what I'm seeing just as a, you know, a 40-year investor, a 48-year investor. I'm seeing the fact that this was really interesting because I don't know if you read the article on Rod Westmoreland and Barron's. I don't know it was in actually the Barron's magazine, but it was on their website. And Rod is the biggest producer in the Southeast now. I knew him when he was not as big, you know, he had, I don't know, let's say he had 400,000 in assets or something. Now he's got 6 billion. His average client is 10 million. And
wow.
And he's got, I think, six FAs working for him. Anyway, they asked him about his asset allocation. And he was basically about 70% equities, 20% private equity, and the rest other alternatives. Okay. Now,
yep.
Do you know what that translates into? That translates
yeah.
into about 90% equities.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Because everybody's
yeah.
saying, oh, alternative investments, private equity. Bullshit. Private equity is just illiquid equities.
Yeah, you can. At the end of the day, you can do two things. You can lend it or own something. I own.
Well, the truth is that I would suggest in today's world, most of your best advisors have hardly any bonds. And the reason is you can't, you know, we've had a 40-year bond market rally, and it's over. I don't think we're going to get a huge move in bonds. I think bonds are up like 6 or 8% this year.
Right.
Yeah,
we started the year at a 160. We're at 60.
So you know, you're either going to reach for yield in some shit bond or bank loans or some crap, or you're going to buy equities. So I think the problem with our normal thinking about equities is with 0% interest rates, it's really hard to find anything that is going to be a decent investment in the bond side. I have a money manager that manages my municipal bonds, and you know, because they have no, they can buy them in volume, and they don't have the spreads and
yep.
all that shit, that I can maintain a decent you know, maybe I can get 3% in a municipal bond portfolio. But that's fine. That's all I want, okay?
Are you worried about munis at all, Rob?
Not if I have a money manager, because I expect them to be smarter than I am, and therefore, you know what the most interesting thing is that this is the ninth reorganization of Argentina, and somebody bought the eighth one, and
right.
they were money
exactly.
managers, right? And if you look at the portfolios, they're bond funds that bond funds that you'd recognize bought Argentina bonds, okay? Now, so do I think money managers know what they're doing? I think these guys do, but I just hold my breath, yeah. You know,
gotcha.
I don't own anything. I don't own any shit bonds. They buy, and I tell them 0 to 10 years is what I want them to buy. That's it. So I'm not looking for any returns out of my bond side. I'm just looking at it as an alternative to cash. And I'm expecting to get all my returns in equities. And that's why you see Apple doing what it's doing, because they don't have another freaking place to put it. And there are fewer equities today than there ever were. So it's not that much choice.
Right. You know, it's interesting, too, because one of the things we've done, Rob, is in this reorientation towards money managers, we focus on boutique managers, and one of the managers we ended up finding are guys that HQ even referred to as an emerging boutique manager, because they were like $300 million or just below that the day we found them. They're doing great job in the value space, I feel like. Their yield was up over 4, but they felt like they had to come out of one of their positions that had 11% yield because they're in the mezz financing. And they made money in it. They made a pile of money in it. They said they just feel like mezz through the end of this year, and then they'll come back to it. So they're still at, what, like a 360, 370?
370.
They're still at a 370 yield with, Rob, about a 17, 18% allocation to cash. So these guys will make some pretty big cash. But one of the things that's really interesting,
Rob, you're breaking up for some reason. I'm getting, your words are getting clipped off.
I'll move closer. Can you hear me now?
Yeah. Try it again. Let's see.
Sorry about that. So anyway, we have started to work with these value guys who are very, very dividend focused. And one of the interesting things that came up in doing all the research and Sean working on that was the interesting thing that if you look at, was it Depot, Sean?
Mm-hmm.
Well, just go ahead and tell Rob about Home Depot. Because I said, you know, some of these stocks, they don't look like they've got the greatest yields in the world. And then Sean spoke to the manager and they came back and said, well, let's tell you what our theory about yields are.
So in the last 10, 12, 15 years, Home Depot has never paid, Rob, more than a 270 yield, and it's averaged somewhere between 220 and 250. Yet they've raised the dividend every single year from what I think was like a dollar share up to, you know, the equivalent of like $10 a share, which obviously tells you that you had a huge amount of growth in the underlying equity at the same time that the dividend stayed basically constant. So in having that conversation with clients about the transition from an accumulation phase to a distribution phase, and having that, you know, essentially inflation built into it, given the fact that your underlying asset is going up while your income is staying relatively constant, that's resonating with a lot of people. And, you know, having that and saying, okay, taking some money off the table from high growth only tech areas, but, you know, including a name like a Walmart or a Home Depot, and how is, you know, life going to, you know, fundamentally change going forward? Well, people are staying in their homes and they're fixing them up. That's why the cost of lumber is basically doubled. So, you know, we have this conversation and saying there are other names out there besides Amazon, Apple, Google, and Facebook that we can allocate capital to.
Right. And with an economic recovery that you'll get a lot more pop in some of these beaten down names than you will Amazon and Facebook. The amazing consistency of those guys' growth, though, is has fooled everybody, because even, you know, the hedge funds were coming out of the, you know, rotating into the cyclical, saying game over, you know, economic recovery, and then bam, they got slammed, you know. and the fangs took off again. So everybody's talking a barbell, right? You've got the fangs over here, and then you've got economic recovery stocks over here. And I love the idea. I've done the same thing and gotten moved into some higher dividend paying stocks that, that, you know, the defense contractors, you know, the Raytheons and the Rockwells and some of those that, you know, just got smashed. And I think are their technology companies to a great extent too. I mean, they're going to be the beneficiaries of all this artificial intelligence and robotics and everything else.
Right.
So I think, you know, the whole world is transitioning to a more digital world, and you can get a nice combination. So so I think you're smart in you're, you know, also it's a defensive play in terms of, you know, it protects you guys from having to be right all the time, you know. Plus, it's
absolutely
fun to see what they buy. You know, it's fun to see what they buy and to know how they think.
It really is.
Whether or not they're worth it, you know. So,
well, you
I
know,
think it's good.
We had coffee with them about a week ago, and for the first time since 2008, they're buying some financials. Only financials where there is what they refer to as a, you know, kind of a just genetically, you know, in the DNA of the company, super strong credit culture where they don't take credit risks and things. And they think of like a U.S. bank corp in that vein. And they look at that stock down 45%, no real credit risk, paying a 480 dividend yield. And they're saying, look, we think this thing comes back 40%. And while we wait, we're going to get paid almost 5%. So, you know, if it takes us 3 years to get 40% and we collected 15%, 55 over 3, we'll take it.
Shit, yeah, all day.
So Russ, let me tell you what we're doing with our plan.
And
get your thoughts on how you see this and what we're trying to do. So, you know, we've gone back and said, you know, not just does your client, quote unquote, have a plan, but are they well planned? Is the plan dynamic? Is it being executed on? And is it real, live, and you know, working? So we're going to rebuild those things. But one of the things that's coming up with clients that this really, really resonates with them is all of our lives, we've taught clients to think about wealth maximization. And when you're thinking about wealth maximization, volatility is of very little concern to you. Return composition isn't really that important to you. And you're looking at average annual returns as opposed to compounded annual returns. But if you then break down and say, well, now I have two goals, which is providing lifestyle cash flow so I can live the way I want to live and do the things I want to do, that is not necessarily completely integrative and consistent with wealth maximization. So what we're doing is we're talking to clients about the fact that, and this came up with the CFO, I think we've talked a little bit about this, Kimberly Clark, which said, look, if we could tell you that we have the portfolio truncated, bifurcated, however you want to think about it, where we've got a lifestyle cash flow model running, which says we're going to create a 60, 70, 75% coverage ratio in the form of dividends, interest rate coupons, your board seats, you know, at some point Social Security, so on and so forth. Will that make you comfortable in your retirement? And she said, I would love to see that. If I could see that, that would really make me feel better. Then what we've said is then you have the other part of the portfolio, which continues to be wealth maximization. And then the next thing that we're thinking about is the next refinement of this is clients love the notion of this coverage ratio. So the next thing that we've been working on and thinking about is we always talk about volatility in terms of security prices. We're trying to develop a statistical way of measuring volatility in terms of income income generation. So if you own, 30 large cap, mega cap companies, how often do those things cut the dividends? How consistent are those dividends? So on and so forth. If you own a basket of preferreds, what's the typical default rate of those? Therefore, say, Rob, we've got a 75% coverage ratio, and within that coverage ratio, there's about a 95% historical dependability of that revenue stream. There's only about a 5% volatility variance in there. And I just think that those things, as we move forward, are the things that are going to help us invest it over the long run. And it also takes us from just managing a model portfolio to, hey, this is created exactly for Rob Knapp, Sean Fitzpatrick, or Rob Bright. What are your thoughts about break lifestyle and then optimization?
I think it's a great marketing idea. I think, portfolio management-wise, I think you'll hurt your returns because you're too dependent on things that won't perform. So you're talking to two different guys here. One is the guy that helps run, institutional money for, like the Island School. I'm the head of the finance committee or investment committee. And so when I don't care what my dividend rate is, I care what my overall rate of return is. And I don't mind taking a portion of the capital gain to use for income because that's a more sophisticated person.
Yes.
A person that actually knows what they're doing knows that it doesn't matter where the money comes from. It's capital gain or dividends or tax the same way. Now, if they were taxed differently, I might put more emphasis on one versus the other, but they're not. So I'm much more interested in asset allocation and making sure that I have the cash set aside that I need. So we need about 250,000 a year for our expenses for the school. So I keep about 300,000 in cash. We have 8 million in the portfolio, and I'm interested in maximizing the return on the portfolio while still taking a reasonable amount of risk. So I'm not a big guy on I like the idea of buckets for the consumer that is a spender or a consumer that is nervous. For the less sophisticated people, I think buckets are great. For me, I just want to make sure I have the money to meet, like right now, I'm thinking now's a really good time to meet some of my charitable obligations that I've committed to over a 7-year period. So, if I'm going to gift to my children or I'm going to gift to a charity, probably is a good time to be doing that stuff. So those are the things that I think about, okay? But
yep.
Remember, I'm in the business, right? And
exactly.
Go
ahead, Rob. I'm sorry.
So I like the other thing that I've got a little stock group that I want them to think about what are the groups that are going to be important in the future. If you could look at the economy today and project out into the next 10 years, what are the groups that are going to be the most important in terms of opportunities for the next, 2, 5, and 10 years? And do I have representation in those sectors? So that's thinking more like a money manager, though, than I am thinking as a financial advisor, okay? Now, if I'm managing the money, then that's the way I need to think. So we need to have a good representation in like, say, gaming, right? In digital gaming. So you want your Activision Blizzards and you want those, right? That may not be something that anybody's thinking about. Gambling, you've just gotten rid of the bookie. So internet gambling is going to be really important in the future and a real big opportunity growing forward. You've got your regular biotechnology companies and others, but these are the pockets that I want to have good representation in now that will be the next Amazons and the next Apples. And so those are the kind of the buckets that I think about. And one of the problems is that really pisses me off is I'm right on a company, but I didn't put enough into it that it made a difference in my performance. Okay. I'm right on the sector, right? But I didn't put enough in. Like if I think that the home building business is going to be good, which it clearly is, do I own Home Depot and do I own XYZ, right? Do I own Lowe's and Home Depot and a mortgage company that's going to take advantage of it and something else? Do I have enough in that sector that it's moving the needle? Okay.
Right.
So, and you know, like it or not, this is a really, you guys like money management, so I'll talk a little about as much as everyone is hating the Chinese right now, their stocks are performing amazingly well.
Yep.
Alibaba is acting like Amazon. I had one of my, Winslow is a money manager for me, and they bought a couple of biotechnology companies and companies that are working on the corona thing. And I've got to kind of go with them, all right? Because the Chinese economy the returns were, I think, 16% there versus, you know, 5% for us. And their S&P 500 in the year 2021, I think, will surpass our S&P 500 in terms of size. Them or not,
right.
And as much shit as we're giving them, you can't get your emotions ahead of your recognition of opportunity. And so I think you got to own a basket of good, high-quality Chinese stocks. You got to be careful. But I think you got to own those. So there's another. That's sort of another, you know, bucket that if you don't fill that bucket, you're going to underperform. So
right.
Anyway, that's the way I'm. Those are the things I'm thinking about versus, you know, covering my income. My actual income has gone. My income needs have gone down quite a bit, in half. Since the corona thing came about, I'm spending half
the
amount of money I was spending. It's shocking. So what do I do with that money? Well, I can give it away. I give it to my kids. You know, so.
I was spending half the money as well until my wife got some decorators in here.
Yeah, look, there you go. And that's one of the things that people are doing. See, they're redoing their houses. Marcia said, let's redo the kitchen next year in the Florida house. I said, okay, we can do that. You know, and so that's the stuff that won't go away, by the way. We'll solve this corona problem, but people will have, I think one of the things to think about is what will have changed and what won't change. People will travel, okay?
Yeah.
But they won't travel at the frenzied pace they were traveling. I think they're going to be a lot more thoughtful about what they do in the future. Because people were just jumping on planes, going everywhere, doing everything, right? Business-wise and everything else. They were just, we were in a crazy way of life where we had to have meetings to have meetings to have meetings. Look at your firm, every firm. They had to have meetings to have meetings to have meetings, right? Right. And now the productivity, because they leave people work, productivity goes through the roof. And the other thing, guys, to keep in mind is everybody is shocked at the earnings. I think 75% of the companies that reported had higher earnings, all right? It's shocking. Why? Because they cut their costs, all right?
Awesome.
And how did they cut their costs? Simple. They stopped traveling. They got rid of all the bullshit they were doing. They stopped advertising in some cases.
You were so spot on. One of our clients runs a large multinational, and I think he said his division normally spends like $10 to $20 million a month or a quarter or something like that, and he spent $35,000.
It's shocking, right? And all that goes right to the bottom line.
Yeah.
And people are home with their families, and you know, they're better parents, and they're better friends. They're having, you know, they miss their friends, but they're good friends they keep in touch with. It's the world has changed, and it may change forever. There'll be lots of people that will want to work at least part of the time from home. And so therefore the home will look different. The offices will be bigger and better and with more things in them. And
although I will say this to you, Rob, I am still a skeptic about the whole work from home thing, because I think one of the reasons you think you've seen productivity from people working from home is they can't go anyplace else. The whole world's been locked down. You get
right.
People, quote unquote, working from home. I joke about a guy who used to work with us who told me working from home. Called in one day and Sean said, God, I can hardly hear you. Where the hell are you? He said, oh, I'm working from home at Hershey Park with my kids.
Right. Yeah, it's
what?
Bullshit. I agree. There's some of that that's bullshit, but there's some of it that's real. The good people will do it well. The bad people will take advantage of it and so forth. But I don't think, you know, why wouldn't everybody take the Supernova course and become better at what they do? Because they don't want to be locked down to a schedule, okay? They don't want that. They like the idea of calling from Hershey Park whenever they feel like it. And you should be there to receive the call. You know, you're my client. I'll get you out of surgery to talk about a dividend increase, you know? It's just bullshit. But that's, you know,
so
I'm working with the people that want higher productivity. Not with the rest.
I'm going to let Sean tell you a little bit about this background of these guys that I've been talking to a little bit about helping with kind of how do we structure some of the things around not so much our internalized team that you know, but we've got planners we work with. We've got credit people we work with. We've got a really broad team. So we have span of control and command challenges around these people that aren't like right outside that we can reach out and touch. So Sean turned me on to this guy, and he talked about how they carry out military operations. This will make great sense to you when he was in Iraq and Afghanistan, and you got to coordinate with the Air Force guys. You got to coordinate with the guys from the Army that are in the theater and on and on and on, all the things you know. He got me introduced to these guys, and I just became kind of mesmerized by him. But the thing that is so Rob Knapp comes from these guys that are all Navy SEALs, except for the one guy that I'm anxious for Sean to tell you what his background was. Because Sean said, Rob, do you know who this guy is? I don't know who the hell he is, and so I'll let Sean tell you who he was. But their motto is discipline equals freedom.
There.
That's Supernova. Discipline equals freedom. So I'll let Sean tell you who the guy is, what he did for a living, and who these guys are.
Well, Robbie, I mean, Rob is right. I mean, you know, you do this process for a number of years now, and you can do that call, you know, from Hershey, you know, because it becomes routine. But, you know, as you said, most people don't have the discipline to stick with this for, you know, a number of months, quarters, or certainly even years. But, you know, so this group and one of the individuals that we spoke with on Friday, I told Rob, I said, you know, this guy is actually the real life Tom Cruise. He's he trains the top guys in the F-22s. And so their entire mantra is just that, discipline equals freedom, and figuring out how, you know, through leadership qualities, you can get people behind you and put yourself in a position to where it not only feeds into, you know, professionally, but personally. And how can you incorporate
so
all of
it? Where did this, is this an Air Force? Is this, what branch of the service uses this, discipline equals freedom, and what? Is it a unit?
So the Navy SEALs. It came out of Navy SEALs out of SEAL Team 3, and I'll send you some of the stuff on it. But I don't know anything about anything, and Sean follows these guys because a lot of them are into this jujitsu stuff that he's in. And so he says, you know, this guy we're talking to, him, I can't believe you got this guy on the phone. I'm like,
sorry, I'm not sure what you're
And I said, why, Sean? Who is he? He says, he's basically Tom Cruise. I go, we need Tom Cruise. He's like, he teaches F-22s at the Top Gun school, you dumbass. That was his last job in the military. But his name's, what's Jocko?
Willink. W-I-L-L-I-N-K.
But he wrote a book that I read after Sean had me listen to two of his YouTube called Extreme Ownership. And it was one of the most powerful books I've ever read in my life. And it gave me great insights into you, Mr. Knapp.
Okay.
I'm like, all right. Now
I'm flattered, I think. I think I'm flattered,
when you look these guys up, you're going to be very flattered. And so what we're doing is they're going to you set up a system where you can control command, a planner over here, a credit analyst over here, an investment banker over here, and bring them all together to help a guy who wants to sell his business when the firm doesn't have a coordinated structure to do that, and It's just kind of a mess.
Yeah, in the past they did, and they ran everything through what they used to call a wealth advisor. And we've talked about this on previous calls, Rob. But, you know, we are the wealth advisors. It's just, you know, the firm itself was positioning, you know, essentially this other hired salaried person who essentially they only said, I don't really do anything here. I just really am the quarterback in the relationship. Well, a client, in our opinion, doesn't want to hear that. You know, they're going to talk
to not. You're the quarterback.
Yeah,
right.
we're
chief finance. Yeah.
And the fact that we're doing 12-4-2, we have the highest level of connectivity and interaction with the client. So punting that part of the relationship to someone else never made sense to Rob and I. And finally, I think the firm is coming around and making us the relationship manager on these deals going forward. So now we're putting ourselves in a position to, you know, identify a higher level of leadership role, so that we can get those guys who are going to be behind us, you know, moving in the right direction and up to speed with where we've been for the last 4 years.
You know, and the other thing, Rob, that I heard your voice so much in these things that I read from these guys. One of this guy's theories is there are no bad subordinates. There are just bad leaders.
Well, that's right. We used to say there are no bad officers, just bad managers. They used to tell me that Memphis was a lost cause, and I'd say, no, you just have had the wrong leader in there for years.
So we'll keep you tuned into some of these things, but I'll get you some. At some point, you're going to want to sit on one of these calls because I actually think it's a ways away, but I think we are creating the holy trilogy, which all starts with Supernova. I predict this, Mr. Knapp, and Sean might slap me, stand up and slap me. I predict within 5 to 7 years, we're doing $10 million a year with no other, maybe one additional FA to take the small stuff off our plate. And it's going to have all started with Supernova. It will then have been further. I think these guys' business, if you want to look at it, Rob, is Echelon Front Consulting.
Mm-hmm.
There's a third thing that I'm trying to figure out in the planning of mapping some things, which I'm not ready yet to chat about. If we can execute at 60 to 70% on these three things that I'm talking about, $10 million is it's in my sights. I feel very confident.
Echelon Front Consulting, that's the name of it? so funny. Yeah. It's because it, you know, flying in formation, echelon formation is a, you know, the most fundamental, simplest flight formation there is. So, just so interesting they picked that name.
Well, one of their biggest things about combat, one of their rules is you got to keep it simple. This whole thing
is built.
The whole system is built on combat. All the things that can go wrong in combat.
Which is everything, right? Okay, good. I think that's fun. That's interesting. I'll look these guys up and check them out.
Good. And by the way, Rob, the reason I think there's a real parallel here with you, Sean introduced me to Jocko. I got one of his books, and I literally, all I did for the next day and a half was read the book. That's all I did. I slept and I read the book.
That's great.
Then the next week, we had two or three opportunities where strategic partners like mutual fund companies, an annuity wholesaler, and I think an insurance company all had this Jocko guy as their featured speaker in their let us add value to your practice. So that's why I'm saying I think you guys could have a great synergy here because he's just starting to understand this business. I mean, I'll be honest with you. The guy we were talking to is a great guy, but he doesn't really understand this business. He was what the hell we were talking about. But and these were big players. This was like MassMutual, AIG.
Jackson National.
So he's gotten traction with these really big companies. But if the only thing you've got is rah, 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 win one for the Gipper, that's a short. I mean, what I would say to you is that all he's figured out so far is how to make himself a guest speaker. He's going to go on the banquet tour, but he's not going to create the kind of recurring and have the kind of impact you could have. And I think if you put you and him together, I think it's crazy.
One of the things I heard you say is that you're creating a mastermind group for businesses that need a team to help them through the sales process.
Absolutely.
I would do a mastermind team of local guys, local professionals.
Yep.
And then I would have a team within their firm. So you need both. You need to communicate with both on a regular basis. For smaller deals, you probably won't use your firm. You'll just use your own mastermind group. For larger deals, you must incorporate the firm into those deals. So the key is the communication. The key is recurring. And what we don't do is we don't discipline ourselves around the recurring experiences. Everybody's great with 12-4-2 with their clients. Everybody sucks with 12-4-2 with their centers of influence. Okay?
Yeah.
And that's what you got to break that. So you guys shouldn't be in charge of keeping track of your 12-4-2s with your centers of influence and your mastermind group. That you should delegate as if it's a client experience. Delegate, what I'm asking you to delegate is not the relationship, but delegating the appointment schedule.
Right.
So you get an agreement from the team that they will meet so many times, and then delegate the occurrences and the appointment schedule to your assistant. Get it off of, because then it will continue to happen. If it's your responsibility to decide when these meetings should happen, they won't happen. Okay? Something else. I mean, look, what you're telling me is that these guys are the new bright, shiny object, okay? I'm sorry, Rick, but that's what you're telling me. The Echelon Group is the new bright, shiny object, okay, in your world. And you, like me, have to be careful that we don't get sucked into the next bright, shiny object. What you need is discipline and rigor around a process of acquisition. You don't need somebody else getting you fired up and excited about discipline. Okay.
Right. No, I agree with that. That's a salient, fair observation.
I mean, look, you and I love this shit. I mean, I do. I love it. I'm ADD as the next guy, and I love the new idea, and I love the new guy, and I love the new concept. But he's not going to tell you anything that I haven't told you, okay, about the business. What you need to do is get fired up about the process of acquisition. Go back to the supernova multiplier and read that with the same energy that you read, you know, this book, Extreme Ownership. There's nothing wrong with getting fired up, but go back to the rigor of what you're supposed to be doing in our business, not getting fired up about combat, okay?
Trust me, I don't want to go anywhere near combat.
Right.
I'll tell you the one thing. I found those books interesting, but as they explain the situations they're in, I'm thinking to myself, no thanks, I'll pass.
Yeah, I know. I mean, when we go into a situation, the worst that we're going to get is a no.
Exactly.
We're not going to get shot, you know. So,
An interesting observation. My brother-in-law was a pretty successful investment banker. And it's interesting. I had dinner with him the other night, and we were talking. And he said, you know, Rob, in a lot of ways, I never really thought about this until the other night when we got done after dinner. He said, but your business is a lot like when I was an investment banker. He said, at least I think your business should be. I said, well, how's that? He said, I really looked at myself like I was a professional athlete. And he said, really, I was like the closer that they brought in at the end. He said, I spent a week flying around on airplanes, reading reports, getting ready for meetings. And only about 10 to 20% of my time was I actually engaged in my craft. So they would get a deal, so they thought they had a process, and they would bring me in to close it. I'd go in, I'd close it, take all the stuff back. He says, then I'd go back. I'd pull the team in, and I'd say to the debt guys, I'm going to have to reach to this debt. Here's how you're going to have to lay that off and do this and that, because the new company will only absorb so much. You guys have to go to gold. These guys have to do this. We can't take all the equity to ourselves. Call Sean Fitzpatrick at Goldman. Tell him I think he ought to take this much. Call Rob Knapp at Lehman. Tell him I think he ought to do this. We're going to do this, that, and the other thing. I've got to head out to Singapore tomorrow. I expect this shit to be on my desk when I get back in 6 days. I'm leaving. That's what his life was.
Right. And they did their jobs. Right. That's
absolutely. You know, and I'll tell you, I've always said to Sean, I don't know if I've ever told you this, but my brother-in-law can be a prick, and it's because he's a short, bald guy named Theodore Carl Wozniak. So he clearly was getting his ass kicked at Poindexter in college. He'd been getting his ass kicked since he was 4 years old. But the two greatest quotes by him, I told him the other night, we were having dinner, and I remembered this. One was, one of his guys was explaining in his office one day, explaining to him all the reasons that this thing wasn't going to happen and couldn't get done on time. He goes, look, if Fitzpatrick doesn't get this done, and then if he doesn't do that, then Knapp can't do that. And if Knapp can't, then this can't happen, and this, and the other thing. And my brother-in-law looked at him and said, yeah, and if your aunt had, she'd be your uncle. What the hell does that have to do with anything?
Right.
And then, so I think that I agree with you about the shiny object, but what I would tell you is, and only time will evidence this, is that all the things that we're talking about are right in the center lane. It's right down the fairway of what you've preached, what you've told us to do, and it is not a new thing. It is simply, if we're going to do this broader thing that you've talked about, how do we become, and mostly me, but how do we both become better leaders and get some command and control and be able to help get guys that don't have the same motivations and the same economic aligned interests and those things with us to keep pulling in the same directions?
Yeah, it's always a communication issue. And it's, you know, if you don't paint the vision and you don't, you know, you've got to set the stage and paint the vision of what you're doing this for. And if you can't move the chemistry of the audience with that, then it's very difficult to get them to take the hill. Okay? So you've got to you got to spend some time on that. You got to spend some time on why you're doing this. What is in it for everybody? Why will the world be a better place if we're doing this? And all you have to do is watch American Greed long enough, and you'll. I mean, there was just one on a guy that spent his lifetime ripping off people that won the lottery. I mean, there's a lot of really bad people out there that if you don't hustle and you don't help them, there's a lot of nasty people that will get their claws on them.
That's for sure.
So whatever your motive, whatever you can do, I mean, why do we have the wars we have? To save the world from dictators and make people free, right? It's a pretty wide kind of crazy idea. That people would do this for freedom. To do what? To do whatever the hell they want to do, right? So why do we do what we do? So they will have freedom to do whatever the hell they want to do and not worry about the money it takes to do those things. What does money do for you? It buys you freedom. So we're giving them something that's worth fighting for, clearly. And what we have to do is make ourselves believe that what we're doing is worth fighting for. And therefore, we must go out and defeat the bad people of the world and win for the good people so that they will have the freedom to retire and to live that life. And a guy that's selling his business, think about the psychological bullshit that goes through that poor guy's head when he's selling his business. We think about the money, right? We think we just do the right asset allocation, or we make sure we do some planning before he sells it so that the money goes to the kids, doesn't get slammed by the tax collector and all this other shit. And then we think we've done the job. No, the guy is complete. Then he's devoid of his company and his purpose in life, and he's left with his family who have gone, his wife who is there, but the kids are all gone. They have their own families. So now he's home with his wife with no purpose, nothing to do. And we congratulate him. And he goes, what the fuck did I just do?
He's ready to kill
him.
He hates us and she's ready to kill us.
Right. Exactly. So you better have a psychologist on your team, and you better be planning the future after the sale of the business as much effort as you put into the sale of the business. So there's a lot more to this that involves life coaching than simply math. And that's what you have to get into when you're doing your financial planning. So let's go back to the financial plan and the purpose of what we're doing and make sure we're delivering, and we have the list of enthusiastically endorsed professionals, and one of those people we put on our mastermind group for the sale of business, and he's a psychologist. And nobody talks about that.
That's okay? A great point.
So that's what I want you guys thinking about when you're doing this. Do we have the why? Is the why strong enough? Have we painted enough of a vision for the client? Have we painted a perfect vision for our team and why we're doing this? That's what will get you fired up. That's what will keep you focused. You know,
yeah.
Jeff Bezos is probably the greatest at doing this of any guy, and his stock keeps going up because he's relentless about his commitment to the client. So whenever you stop thinking, are we focused enough on the client? What does the client want? How can we make their experience better? That's what you want to keep obsessing about.
Gotcha.
Okay, I got to go.
All right, sir. Thank you, sir. Have a great week.
Good ideas. I'll get the book. I'm not poking holes in the book or his mission.
I understand.
But you guys have, you know what you're doing. Okay? You just have to get fired up about what it is that you're doing and why you're doing it. And then execute brilliantly. Just keep executing
Absolutely. Brilliantly.
All right?
And I appreciate it, man. Have a good day. Bye now.
Yeah, thanks. Bye.